Hey fam, I'm Jada Pinkett Smith, and this is the Red Table Talk podcast. All your favorite episodes from the Facebook Watch show in audio, produced by Westbrook Audio and iHeartRadio. Please don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. On this Red Table Talk, how to spot a narcissist in your life.
Everyone is getting hurt by this. I've never seen anything like this.
The biggest warning signs.
These are the people willing to manipulate, to exploit, to lie, to cheat, to steal.
I know some people like that.
The worst thing you can do to a narcissist is forgive them. They're going to take your forgiveness and turn it into a weapon.
You're in a relationship with a malignant narcissist. How the hell do you get out?
It can be dangerous.
You just blew my mind with that.
So today we're doing a show on narcissism.
It's really affecting people in a really strong way.
I definitely feel like I have narcissistic traits.
Definitely.
I don't know if I'm a clinical narcissist.
But yeah, because there is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, the industry I'm in, who's not a narcissist in it? We cultivate narcissism in my industry.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's true.
Everything is about me, 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 me. All right, well, let's go talk to our narcissist expert.
So this is one of our most requested topics.
Yeah, this narcissistic epidemic is serious business. For me, I'm just trying to, in my journey as of late, just trying to identify any traits of narcissism within myself, which I know exist. I'm in one of the most narcissistic industries.
I would agree with that.
And then on top of it, now that we have social media,
I think that just breeds narcissism. Because I still find it a little strange to be constantly taking pictures of yourself and posting, like, going everywhere you go.
Well, right? I know for you, Willow, you've always had a very interesting relationship with social media.
Because people would always be asking me, like, post selfies, and that would make me so, like, what's going, like, that's sus.
Even in your life, you do everything you can to get attention off of you.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Yeah.
But in cool ways. The clothes you wear.
But in cool, honestly.
No, I think it's the coolest thing because you're so opposite of most young people your age. So today we have a beautiful woman that's coming to speak to us who's written many books on this subject, Dr. Romani. She is a psychologist, a professor, and a world-renowned expert on narcissism.
Wow.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I've watched you talk about this. You're so passionate. I can tell that it is your life's work to have people understand what narcissism is all about.
Everyone is getting hurt by this. I've never seen anything like this.
What is the definition of narcissism?
A lot of people think it's somebody who's just into themselves.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Could be anything, but it's actually almost the opposite of self-love. I'd almost call it self-hate.
Ooh. Wow.
These are people who have no empathy for other people. They're really grandiose. They're deeply entitled. They're arrogant. Mm. They can't deal with frustration. And when faced with frustration, they become rageful. You can't win an argument with a narcissist.
And I see that. I see that in people so much. They never want to feel wrong.
Right.
So I always take it. And I don't like that. So I just... That's 100% my thing.
Right.
Because I'm like, this is going to be an argument. You're going to not want to feel wrong.
Right.
So I'm just going to cut the middleman.
Right.
And just be like, responsibility. Okay. I'm the person who takes all the blame.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you did it 10 times in a row with a partner who had some of these narcissistic tendencies, they could easily crawl in there and take advantage of that.
It's true.
Other things that you're going to look for with a narcissist, they're constantly seeking validation. Narcissists are very, very sensitive, hypersensitive to the point of being paranoid.
Right.
Because when it comes down to the core, they're deeply insecure.
Right.
Wow. So that's not self-love.
Right.
Right? But because they're so insecure, they open up with, look how great I am.
Yeah.
And that's why it sells so well in the entertainment industry, because they can fake it till they make it and then keep faking it.
Right.
If you work in the entertainment industry and you haven't encountered a narcissist, it's not possible. It's not possible.
Time.
It's not a chance.
It's not possible.
It is not possible. It's like going to the beach and not seeing sand.
Right.
Like, good luck with that.
It's true.
But it's really harmful because it's one thing to fake it for a performance. It's quite another to be with a person who invalidates you All the time.
Are there different levels to narcissism?
So the classical form of narcissism is sort of what most people picture, that sort of grandiose, look how great I am, look at my car, look at my dress, I'm all that, right? Yeah. So they sort of suck all the oxygen. We're often entertained by them. They're very charming.
Yep.
It's why people get drawn in.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that are the narcissists we miss, what we call the covert narcissists. Those are the dark nights of the narcissistic world, because they come off as really victim-y.
Mm-hmm.
The world never saw how great I was. You know, if the world knew how great I was, I'd be the next big thing. Mm. So they're very angry at the world. Mm. They're very sullen. They can often look depressed.
Yeah.
So we miss them because they're not putting on the big show.
We don't associate that with
narcissism.
But they're
angry.
Yeah. They're very angry.
They're very angry. And they can be very dangerous as a result. Those are often covert narcissists.
Wait. The Joker is a covert narcissist.
Yes. Joker has a very covert narcissistic feel. Exactly.
That's crazy.
That's because look at his whole life was nothing went his way.
Exactly. Nothing went his way. And then he said, I'm going to make you see. Ooh, that's scary.
Then we go on to the malignant narcissist, which to me is the most dangerous dark narcissist of all. Because these are the people who not only can be quite grandiose and charming, but they're willing to manipulate, to exploit, to lie, to cheat, to steal, to throw you under the bus. They're dangerous.
Right,
and they are, and to me, it's like the last stop on the train before being a psychopath.
Yeah.
One last one, though, what we call the noble narcissist. These are the people who do lots of good things, lots of charitable stuff, and donate lots of money. But the reason they do it is only to get validation. These are the people like, I need my name on the building. Lots of Instagram posts, hashtag Rescue Saturday.
Yeah,
and they look really good rescuing, too. They look good.
Hair looks shoes on point.
It's all
no
good.
No sweat.
Yeah,
I'm
no
good.
Sweat. So it's that. But what they are is they're often, they look like a savior to the community, but behind closed doors, they are cruel to their families.
Oof.
They're cruel to their partners. And everyone will say, you're so lucky to have that mother or father. They are saving the world. And you're thinking, oh, my God, my life is a living nightmare.
Yeah. This is deep.
Yeah, that's for real.
What would be some of the traits?
Okay, the real thing that this all spins on is that lack of empathy.
Okay.
You just don't care about other people.
How do you notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, you're very distracted. They often like to say, I have ADHD.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have ADHD? You just managed to talk about yourself for an hour. So that ADHD apparently only kicked in 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So
I know some people like that.
A context. Yeah, right? They can't be bothered.
Yeah.
They can't listen.
They can talk about themselves all the time. And then once you say something, they're like, how about we just go do something else?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh, right.
Yeah. They just don't care when the conversation's not about them. So they will take, and that can be devastating for people. And it's a lot for a person to get their head around that you just don't care.
I know there are just people who have those traits, but don't necessarily have the diagnosis.
Very few people have the diagnosis. So you hear people talk about narcissistic personality disorder, and that's the sort of mental illness, right?
Got it.
Honestly, in the research, 1-4%.
Wow.
So people are saying, well, that can't be the case because it's like every other person I encounter. And that's because when we talk about narcissism, it's almost an adjective, basically, like calling someone stubborn or friendly or agreeable. If you say someone's narcissistic, it's really a sign that this is someone where it's really invalidating to be in their presence.
Have you ever had experience?
Yes. Really, it put me in dangerous situations. It made me cynical. More than anything, it broke my heart. For a while, I lived in that reality of I was nothing.
Right.
And I didn't deserve better than that. And to break those narratives, some of which were ancient for me, it took a lifetime of work. I've been in therapy for a long time.
Yeah.
It's made me much more cautious. And so I'm very discerning when I meet new people.
What about you, Jada?
Were you ever hurt?
Big time. Big time, devastated, because you bring people into your inner sanctum when they make you believe that they're one thing.
Yeah.
And then something happens and then you realize they are something completely and utterly different. And it can be very painful.
Mm-hmm.
And dangerous.
And it also leads you to doubt yourself, because the biggest fallout of narcissistic abuse is the amount of self-doubt it leaves a person with. They doubt themselves professionally, personally,
their
future relationships and all their decision making. Some of them will say, I can't even go to the grocery store anymore and make a reasonable decision. I always say to people, there's two surefire signs you're in a relationship with a narcissist. Number one, you feel compelled to start recording all your conversations.
Ooh.
Because you feel like I must have heard that wrong. That's how much they feel like they're losing their reality.
Right.
Number two, you feel the need to write these really long texts and emails to them explaining yourself because they don't listen. Yeah. Why would they read your email? But people will spend hours, days writing these long letters, emails, texts, explaining everything, thinking that maybe if they take the time to read it, they'll understand it. I said, they don't want to understand it. So you just wasted 3 days unless it made you feel better to write it.
Yeah.
Something else I tell folks, it's what I call the 90-10 rule. We tend to put 90% of our effort and our energy into the most toxic people in our world, leaving only 10% for the good, loving, healthy people,
really
right?
That's really true.
Narcissistic people are a full-time job.
Yeah.
If we flipped the math and gave 90% to the good people and 10% to the unhealthy ones, it would be so much better for our health.
Yeah. It sounds like narcissists know what they're doing.
They're not aware that they're insecure. Their lack of self-awareness means they're not even aware of what they're doing to other people. Sadly, narcissists get rewarded for their behavior, so it's hard. They're always getting told by the world, you're great, you're fantastic. It's hard to end the pattern.
Yeah.
I've worked with clients who are in their 80s, and I've worked with clients who are 18. And I'm going to be frank with you, I actually think the baby boomers are the most narcissistic generation of all.
I really do.
They were the me generation. It's all about me. I got to make it about me. And what ended up happening is they've kind of robbed the treasury. The millennials are really suffering financially. They're putting their dreams on ice.
Why?
And the baby boomers are no problem sort of taking their half out of the middle. So that feels narcissistic to me. All due respect.
Wow, that is really interesting. I was not expecting that answer.
I actually think we're throwing the poor millennials under the bus. They've got a lot more heart than my colleagues who are the baby boomers.
Whoa.
Just lost my job. But
Wow, you just blew my mind.
I would have never guessed.
No, me either.
The millennials have their moments.
Right.
Taking a selfie doesn't make you a narcissist. But living and dying by that selfie, that's where it becomes...
What about when every single photo on your Instagram is you?
That's what I'm saying. When it becomes a measure of a person's self-worth, right? So you have to figure out what's normative.
Do you think people over time have just become just more insecure?
Like I do. I do, and you know why? Think about it. I can't get you to buy something unless I can convince you you need it.
Yeah.
So if I tell you, you'd be a lot prettier if you're wearing a different pair of shoes.
Exactly.
And if you are vulnerable to that message,
then
which most people are, like, I need to have those shoes. What?
How do you become a narcissist?
If you're not born that way. There's no narcissistic babies. This one's on the squarely, on the sadly, on the shoulders of the parents. Kids who are narcissistic either had narcissistic parents themselves or really distracted parents. Kids who are overindulged, meaning that they get anything they want.
All the attention.
Any experience, any money, but their emotional needs are completely undernourished. That's the difference. They're, as far as they're concerned, they go to Disneyland every weekend.
Exactly.
But sometimes they just want to cry and say, I feel sad, I feel scared, and there's no adult to be found when that happens. That overindulgence against underindulgence teaches the child that only their outside external stuff matters. And then kids who only get valued for what they do, you kick a soccer ball well, you sing well, you get good grades, you look pretty. Those kids who learn that realize I'm only about the things I do and how I look, and nobody cares about my inside world. By the time they're about 16, 17, 18, this starts to emerge, and there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do about it. This is not a pattern that changes.
It doesn't change? So you're telling me that a narcissist can't be cured?
Imagine this is what healthy you need to be for a healthy relationship, right up here, okay? Respectful, kind, compassionate, there, present, all that good stuff, okay? Here's the narcissist, all right? Even a good therapist like me, and I have a third of my clients are narcissists, I can get them up to here. We got a problem. So we can teach them to be on time, but now they're on time and not listening to you.
So how does one open their life to a narcissist?
They're so good at making you feel like the center of their universe. We actually call it love bombing. It's like getting a butterfly under glass. It's a game. And then once they get the beautiful creature under glass, they put it up on a shelf and they forget about it.
Ay, ay, ay.
And it hurts. That day they discard you and just put you up on the shelf is a cold, dark day because you felt the sun was only shining for you.
I feel like a lot of people who have those issues in romantic relationships do that for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want to win you, and then they get you, and then it's like, now they turn.
Right. And they play the game well. They're really good at courtship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the big gesture. And everything happens too fast. Yeah. You're moving in too fast. You're getting engaged too fast. You're getting married too fast. And in that way, they kind of trap you even more because narcissists are really controlling. Research shows they're more likely to get a partner than a person who's less narcissistic. Oof. Because they are so successful. Will they make more money?
Mm-hmm. Mm. But the person that falls yeah. for that seems like it would be a person with really low self-esteem, maybe.
Not necessarily.
No.
And that's what it's strange. It's almost there's two groups. It's what you're saying. It's people who are themselves very insecure, who come from tough backgrounds, and who are people pleasers. People pleasers are very vulnerable to narcissism. Where do they become people pleasers?
Yeah.
The darkness. It's all connected. But they fall for it because they want to fix, and they run around in circles, and they keep giving that narcissist all the supply the narcissist wants.
Oh, God, yeah.
But isn't people pleasing part of just wanting to be accepted and liked?
But why can't you just be enough without doing all the effort?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
When you people please, you really are putting in an active effort, almost like I'm not good enough
right.
unless I'm doing something.
Yeah.
I've got to
lean over.
Okay,
I might have a little bit of that.
A lot of women do.
Hearing it like that is like, I used to hear people pleaser and be like, oh, that's not me. But then when it's like, oh no, like you want to help, it's more of like, I'm here for you. It's more like about me. Like I mm-hmm. feel like I'm not doing my part.
But then why do you have to do a part?
I don't know.
Natural relationship is
right.
not that effortful. But a lot of people, again, especially women, grow up believing they have to do to earn love. Because believe it or not.
No, I'm okay, saying I need to start seeing her for my codependence.
That's right. I'll take care of you in 6 weeks. We'll be done.
Are you tomorrow at 12?
Yeah, we're good. That's right.
Yes.
We can pitch it in. Okay. So we're good. But on the flip side, and this is what's so interesting, people from really happy families fall for these folks, too, because we want to think
yeah.
these really insecure people with low self-esteem. People from really happy families actually believe love can cure everything. Let's forgive.
It's
Let's
true.
Give second chances. The worst thing you can do to a narcissist is forgive them and give them second chances, because they're going to run with that, and they're going to take your forgiveness and turn it into a weapon.
So what happens
Whoa.
To
wow.
the person
yeah, that's
who's in a relationship with a narcissist?
People get stuck in these. Part of it's like an addiction. It's like chasing a high. I've got people 10 years into a marriage who are saying, I just want to go back to that weekend in Miami. Oh. I said, that weekend in Miami was 10 years ago. I mean, I don't care how good the sex was. That was
right.
just still
yeah,
one
exactly.
weekend. Okay? What narcissists are masterful at is as soon as they feel like their partner's pulling away, it's love bombing part two,
mm-hmm.
part three. And you see how it becomes an addiction. The other person in the relationship learns like, ooh, if I start pulling back,
then they'll do it again.
They're gonna chase me. And that starts becoming a new dysfunctional cycle.
Yeah.
But the big mistake that keeps people in is they think they can change the narcissist.
Right. Yeah.
Some people spend 20 years trying to change this person.
Oh,
I'm gonna
God.
Dress differently. I'm gonna lose weight. I'm gonna
oh.
make more money. I'm gonna pay more attention. I'm gonna watch football. I'm going to have one
so
kid.
Sad.
I'm gonna have five kids. And that's a lot of what keeps narcissists in business is we still believe in fairy tales.
Right.
We really think someone's going to sweep in mm. and make it all better.
So are they usually cloaked in like some sob story?
Oh, always. What? A lot of narcissistic people have really rough backstories.
Right.
They may have been neglected. They may have been abused. But here's the rub. It's not an excuse for abusing someone now. That's never acceptable. And if somebody says, the reason I'm like this with you, the reason I'm mean to you is because this was done to me, I tell the person who's being victimized by this, you got to get out because you didn't do that to them in the first place.
Exactly.
Abuse is never excusable. I don't care what a person's backstory is.
Exactly.
So if you're in a relationship with a malignant narcissist,
yeah.
how the hell do you get out?
It's not easy. It's actually scary and it can be dangerous. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. And
okay,
say,
please
no,
don't.
No, just find your power and walk out
right.
the door. Because malignant narcissists do something we call coercive controls. It's like what you see in classical domestic abuse situations.
Yeah.
They track a person's comings mm-hmm, and goings. Mm-hmm. They know everyone you talk to. They isolate you from the people
right.
you love. You don't
right.
feel like you have a safe place to go to anymore. There's often financial abuse. People in these relationships will sometimes give up their careers because they've become so isolated mm. and they're faking it to the world. Many times, other people don't know how bad it is. Now, in the worst of these cases, it gets very dangerous. There's a need for restraining orders.
Yeah.
And sometimes these stories do end tragically. There's no minimizing this. I have worked with women who it takes us 4 or 5 years to get them out.
Oh,
and there's
goodness.
No clock on this. So
is it
not
because of the mental and emotional
yeah,
attachment?
It is. It's mental and mental control. Somebody literally running you like a puppet. And and then sometimes people leave and it's terrifying. They are years in court dealing with horrific custody battles because many times the narcissist doesn't actually really want the kid. They want to stick it to their ex.
Right. Exactly.
And that narcissistic parent may turn those kids against their healthy parent. That's not unusual either. So the fallout from this is huge.
I get that. I think we have so much judgment when we see people in certain kinds of entanglements and not really understanding
100%
what it's all about.
What their perspective. All about, you know.
No, they don't. They absolutely don't.
The danger of it.
Also, it's how they, I would think, it's how they package it. If you're going to be with me, I'm going to take care of you. You don't have to work. You just enjoy your life. And you don't need those friends over there. You don't need
them. They're bringing you down. And always wait for the ultimate narcissistic love sentence. No one's ever gonna love you the way I love you.
I do.
That's like wearing a malignant narcissist t-shirt. Like, go pack your stuff, get out. Like, go to the bathroom during the date, wind the window out the bathroom. Like, you need to get out.
Yeah. Like, no one is gonna love you like I do.
But yet, some people think that's romantic. Yeah. I'm in this
love story. So many songs that have
story.
That line.
Yes.
There are a lot of songs that...
And they're considered love songs, not psychopathology songs.
Right.
Like
right.
This really, really dark.
That song, Every Move You Make, Every Breath You Take, I'll Be Watching You.
Yeah, great. That's a malignant narcissist love song.
That's
we could make it sound like a whole like playlist.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's really scary. But keep in mind, too, what malignant narcissists and all narcissists do to their partners, they confuse them. They do something called gaslighting. And gaslighting is when you doubt someone's reality.
Okay, because people say that a lot, and I
wasn't quite sure what that meant either.
You're being too sensitive is a classic example of gaslighting.
Yeah.
Because you are actually denying someone's emotions.
Yeah.
That never happened. I never said that.
Yeah.
You're crazy. You're the narcissist. That's all gaslighting.
Oh.
It's like being in a cult. It's like living with a bunch of mirrors, but none of them show your own reflection. That's what it's like to be in a narcissistic relationship.
Wow.
Oh my God, that's so scary.
They overtake their minds, and the person is so confused that it gets to be too hard to leave. They actually believe they're a bad person, they're too sensitive, they're foolish, they're stupid, and that's their self-talk.
Where does that term come from? Because I don't even get how that term means what it means.
It comes from a movie called Gaslight. And it was about a man who lived in a house back in the old days when you had gaslights and you could turn them up and down and change the intensity of the light.
Right.
And he kept fooling with the levels of the gaslight. And she'd say, oh, have you turned up the lights? He said, no. The lights haven't been turned. And she goes crazy.
Yes.
She goes completely insane.
Wait, she goes insane.
She goes insane. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
And that's where the
so
term comes
crazy.
From.
We asked you, our RTT fam, about how narcissism has affected your lives. And we received thousands of messages from across the world. First, we have Alisa from Chicago. Hi, Alisa.
Hi, everyone.
So nice to meet you.
So share
nice
with us what's
you.
Going on.
My situation is a little tricky.
Okay.
It's about my mother.
Oh, wow.
Basically, growing up, my mother has always made statements like, all my kids do is take from me. She's made statements that her life would be better off without children. And so when I decided to become a mother, which was a big choice, especially when you hear growing up that kids are not a great idea, I found myself triggered for just being a mom.
Ooh.
But I would look at him with resentment and anger the same way that I experienced as a kid, even to this day. And we could talk on the phone for a little bit, or she can come for a visit, and then I'm sad, I'm angry. So with someone like myself who has a relationship with a parent who can exhibit some narcissistic traits, how do you continue on in your life? And how do you stop yourself from inflicting that type of pain on your own kid?
Wow. It's such a great question. First of all, you said an important word, which is grief. Many ways when a person has a narcissistic parent, what they grieve is that they didn't get the thing that every child deserves, which is a loving, consistent parent. And that's a huge part of the healing, recognizing that so you can grieve it and let it go. What's striking me, though, is you still have contact with your mom, and those conversations leave you feeling depleted, invalidated. Mm-hmm. Those are classical reactions. Part of your healing is putting up better boundaries with mom. I don't care if you have to set a timer during those phone conversations. You might notice that you hit the wall at 5 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Do not stay on the phone with her for too long because I hate to say it, and forgive me for being this dismissive, but it's like a toxin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you keep taking it in, you're not going to feel good. Being invalidated doesn't feel good. And I actually applaud you for your willingness to try to maintain that relationship, but you have to do it in a way that preserves you. You need to learn to mother you because you didn't get that. So in some ways, resenting your son is because you're having to mother yourself. At the same time, you're mothering your son.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
And it's courageous.
Yeah.
You are not to blame for your mother dropping the ball. That was her responsibility. Make sure you stay clear on that.
Oh, wow. Thanks, wow. Elisa.
Thank you.
I hope that helps
you on your journey.
So much. Yes.
Thank you.
Now we have Sharon from New York.
Hi, Sharon.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me. So my ex-boyfriend and I have two children together. He's a narcissist, jealous, and controlling. About 4 months ago, I broke up with him and have been attempting to co-parent, but it's been horrible. He continues to try to control me, being jealous, asking me where I am, and even goes as far as texting my son to get the answers. When I tell him we're no longer together, he plays a victim and we get nowhere. So I need to know, how do I navigate this? I want my kids to have a relationship with their dad, but at the same time, I need to have healthy boundaries in place for that to happen.
You know, so Sharon, you said something interesting. I'm co-parenting with him. You're actually not. You're a single parent with an elephant on your back. You are going to have to be the strong link in this chain for them. You're going to be the one who teaches them empathy. You're going to be the one who teaches them how to manage their emotions. And you have to be that consistent space because it's not unusual for a narcissistic co-parent to turn kids around against their other parent, to almost turn them into spies against that parent. And this isn't going to be an easy journey. You're going to need support. And the other thing, Sharon, is it's critical you document everything. You keep every text message. You keep every voicemail. Even though you weren't married, so you don't have to go through a divorce, you may still have to deal with family court. And documentation is everything. You don't get to waltz into a courtroom and say, he's a narcissist. They're not going to hear it. So you need to monitor the situation more closely than anyone because you are their advocate. And keep an eye on those kids. Like, if they start feeling like they're getting anxious, you need to step in and make sure they get the services they need. This isn't an easy road for them, but you need to take care of you. Every day of this is going to feel like a difficult battle and journey. Please be ready for that because he's not going to go quietly. He's always going to try to control you long after those kids turn 18.
Sharon, you think you can do that?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Try. It's a process.
It's a process.
Yeah. Just make sure you go into the community and try to get yourself some help.
Yes.
Because you need support in this.
Yes. Don't be shy to use domestic abuse resources. A lot of women think these aren't relevant to me, right? I'm not getting beaten up. That's actually a small sliver of what they do. Right. They are really good at understanding coercive control and emotional abuse.
Right.
And they often have some of the best advocates.
And know that you're not alone. We had a lot of people write in about this exact kind of scenario.
Thank you,
Sharon.
Thank you.
The awareness is on point. They be knowing.
Yeah.
But you know what it is? This is where the internet changed the game because you're looking up, my partner does not listen to me and I'm always walking on eggshells.
Right.
Bing! Narcissist comes out. Back in the day, how would you have known that?
Next is Jeannie from Maryland. Hey, Jeannie. What can we help you with today?
So for the past 9 years, I've been in a very toxic and emotionally abusive relationship. Mm. We've broken up several times, and he always manages to suck me back in. Part of me feels like it's because I'm afraid to get old alone. Mm. And my 16-year-old daughter keeps telling me I deserve better. This time, I don't want to get sucked back in, and I don't know how to let go.
Okay, so what does he say? What does he do to pull you back in?
I love you. I miss you. I can't live without you. I know I screwed up. You're the best thing that's ever happened to me.
And since you've been to this rodeo a few times, you know that that's not going to happen. I want you to take the time and write down every terrible thing he's done. You need it all in one place. Because when you want to hear, I love you, it's amazing how selective our memory becomes. We engage in something called euphoric recall. We only remember that one good thing in the midst of 1,000 bad ones. You need to almost be popped out of the kind of hypnosis that happens. That's number one. Number two, by being in a relationship with him, there's times you missed out on certain things in your life. Friendships you didn't pay attention to, experiences you didn't have. When we think about loneliness, we make it too much about a partner, and I get that. But go and do those things with your friends, like watch the movies he wouldn't watch with you. Stay at the party late. Because what happens is we get so focused on making a connection with a partner, we forget that there's all these other people we can get connection from. And the more we practice healthy connection, the less willing we will be able to take the junk that someone like him is sending your way. It also requires you to step up to the plate of your own soul and remind yourself you deserve better. You have to be able to do that for yourself. I can't tell you. Right. No one at this table can tell you. This is an exorcism. Yes. You've got to let this demon go.
There it is.
Change your phone number, Jeannie. Change your phone number. And what about her putting, if she can't put herself first, think about her daughter.
That's right. I totally agree with Gammy. Because you know what she's going to learn here, Jeannie? She's going to learn judgment about men. And if she sees that her judgment was on and you acted in accordance with that, you may be protecting her from making the same mistake.
The same mistake.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you.
Good luck.
You
got this.
You
got this.
Thank you. This was really enlightening.
Thank you for making this amazing show. To hear three generations...
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like, you really have. Like, thank you. I can just say on behalf of the people I get to help, you're making a difference.
You're bringing tears to my eyes. That's why we do it.
Hey, RTT family. Join our Red Table Talk group on Facebook to become part of the conversation. And be sure to follow the show page to catch up on all our episodes.
So we're here with Dr. Romani. So we're talking about narcissism. Swipe up.
All right.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I think a lot of people will benefit from that.
Hopefully.
To join the Red Table Talk family and become a part of the conversation, follow us at facebook.com/redtabletalk. Thanks for listening to this episode of Red Table Talk Podcast, produced by Facebook Watch, Westbrook Audio, and iHeartRadio.